Welcome once again to the K-Top Salon Show. I am the son, also known as Eric Payne, one of the co-hosts of the K-Top Salon Show with co-host me, Eric Payne, and legendary newsman Wayne Gilman. And you are?
I'm the mother, your mother, Kate Thompson. Okay, and we are here in the studio, we're ready to go. We're going to have a very exciting guest, you know, today. You know, I was talking to her years ago, and she had to introduce me to the art of visualization. And we're going to be talking about that today. We're going to be talking to Glenn Taylor. I think right now that Glenda probably has her doctorate degree, you know, so I'm going to call her Dr. Glenda Taylor. She may not like that. However, she's an extremely bright woman, one of the most intelligent, brilliant women, writer, everything. She will give you information that you can use, and she will tell you about your life and your choices, and she will say, don't worry about the path that you have taken or the opportunities you've ignored. Instead, she says, breathe in the life that surrounds you, let it fill your soul with light and hope. And so therefore, what happened was that she had introduced me to this book, The Mental Science of Thomas Troller, and the name of it is Your Invisible Power. And the author is Genevieve Bayron. And I've mentioned this book before. It is a book about telling you what to do and putting things in place. And we're going to be talking about that, and we're going to be talking to Glenda today. And she will be calling in shortly. And I'm quite sure our co-host, Wayne Gilman, will be calling in very shortly also. Lots of things going on, a lot of politics, a lot of nasty stuff. And by nasty, I'm talking about, you know, the campaign. Eric, you know, the people running for the office of President of the United States, and then with a person who is a disaster walking, you know, we all never, I hate to even say his name, but it's depressing, you know, to hear him. It really is. He is now telling us that that all people from the East, Muslims, should not be allowed in the country. And it's incredible to hear. You don't even know what in the world is going on. And then, you know, I think I'm shocked about the amount of people, you know, who endorse him, or who are really listening to him, you know, because the stuff is so outrageous. You know, when he talks about, you know, not paying attention to people who are really people of God, and he is just the opposite. You know, I don't know, I feel very strong. I don't even know what to say about him, other than I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, yeah, Donald Trump, he's a piece of work. And what are you going to do when somebody just continues to do crazy stuff? As you said, Touchdown Mom, he called for what? Muslims not to be allowed to come into this country. And he also called for what? You know, insulted Mexican people, African Americans, everybody, pretty much everybody under the sun. And, you know, he's getting referred to Barbara Walters' interview with him, asked him if he was a bigot. And I think that recently when he mentioned not allowing any Muslim folks to get into the country, he probably went a little too far. And now you have people in London, in England, saying things that he's you know, they're kind of anti-Donald Trump. And you know, to me that, you know, he speaks the truth that a lot of these people are thinking. And I was thinking earlier today that it's not really, you know, racist. You have your race, you've got your prejudice, you've got your bigoted people. And I think that, of course, he appeals to the extremes, the racist, the prejudice, but also bigoted. And I think bigoted is a phrase that can be used for a lot of these people that are supporters of him, because they already have seemed to be preconditioned or already have this kind of negative feeling that they're being left out of society, and they're kind of bigoted in terms of the way they look at some of these other people. You know, they look at America with more immigration happening, obviously the Mexican people or the people that they target as being the problems with the immigration. You look at the Muslims, they try to create an image of the Muslims that are a person of color, at least beige and other, you know, beige on down in terms of color. So, and these people get more riled up when Donald Trump says these things and gives them this kind of red meat. And it's kind of because I think that he represents a large portion of this, of his voters are bigoted to a certain degree in terms of some of the things they think of you. You want to say?
Yeah, and also, I mean, I really think that something just may be wrong because of the fact that when he starts talking, he talks on and on and on and on, and he seems to be driven. You know, when he goes on, he doesn't listen to anyone. He talks and talks and talks. It's incredible because the fact that all the stuff that he's saying is so negative. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't stop him. And even you hear the different people, different hosts and the news people and everything, and everyone talking to him and trying to talk, they can't get a word in. It's as if he is so desperate to be heard, his word, his voice. And I think he really believes what he's saying about all these negative thoughts that he has and all about it's incredible. I think that I think that somebody like that has really lost it.
Yeah.
You know, I really do.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that he's desperate. He's probably going to be desperate in a minute, but he seems to be the type of individual that, you know, is so used to. He's a rich guy. He's telling people what to do and getting his way all the time. So whenever anybody says anything, and he's used to telling people, don't worry about it. It is what I say it is. What I says goes. And, you know, that's why he just goes on and really doesn't listen to anybody when they try to interview him. He just says what he wants to say. He'll say whatever is expedient at the time, whether it's true or not, or whether it's factually correct or not. And I'm surprised that just now, it's just recently, within the last week or two, I guess since he said no Muslims should be allowed in the country, that all of these news people are starting to stand up to him. Because if you look for the previous several months, nobody was standing up to him. I mean, you don't have to stand up and correct a guy. I guess that what your job in the media is to be objective and interview the person and let them tell their own story. However, nobody was standing up to him or challenging on some of this information. It was really odd to me. And finally, Chuck Todd, who's the moderator of Meet the Press Sunday, decided to challenge him on some things. But it was just bizarre that they wait until now, something so glaring and obvious that they can't not challenge him. And it's just really kind of ironic to me. I watched a segment of the TV show Morning Joe the other day, and them too, they decided to challenge him a little bit, begin to challenge him a little bit. But, you know, it's really crazy how people let this guy, because some of the things he says are true, like, you know, not trusting the sister of one of the shooters in San Bernardino in terms of her, just the way she was answering the questions. I didn't trust her either. So some of the things he taps into that he's correct on, some people agree with him, but then he doesn't care if he's playing to that extreme party. And we got our other co-host who's joined us, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Wayne, you want to get in on that discussion about...
Good evening, Eric and Kay. Thanks, man. I happen to agree with you. I think the media has been throwing softballs at him to a certain extent. But the one thing that I have to say that he has brought up, especially when the government has done an introspection of its security system, it to a certain extent has pointed out how weak we and vulnerable we still are, you know? And that's the interesting thing that I've gotten out of it. But, you know, Donald Trump should be just run out of town. I mean, there's a campaign now in New York to take his name down off the, not New York, in the state of Connecticut, off Trump Towers in Stanford. And, you know, I mean, he has somehow resonated with a part of the U.S. populace that clearly is not thinking, you know. They just like this cavalier attitude, say what I will, and not even... have any respect or pay attention to the Constitution, all these things, you know. So, and I happen to agree. I mean, a lot of these shows, I watched them this morning. He was on that show on ABC with Michael Strahan. And even though he's not a seasoned journalist, he asked some important questions. But again, it goes back to this friendly banter, you know, oh, he's a good guy. You know, this guy's a blatant racist. You know, he's been a racist from the day one, since the Central Park jogger case, Eleanor Bumpers, Amadou Diallo. I mean, people in New York know him, you know,
mm-hmm.
but it's what goes on outside of New York and they see him as an entertainment figure as opposed to a local real estate mogul and a politician of sorts, if you will. You know, it's the first time I think he's really had some sort of long campaign, you know, and I don't want to use the word quality, but something of substance that's ran this law, you know. And I underscore the word substance because clearly there is no substance with this man. You know, all of it is like he shoots from the hip, he doesn't think about what he says, and then when he's gotten caught in a tailspin, he figures out a way to conveniently say, well, I didn't mean it that way, and, you know, that's nonsense. And I tell you, I just hope he sticks in there because it will make Hillary Clinton's campaign that much easier for her to, win the White House, come next year.
Yeah. It's ironic. It's not ironic. It's just strange. He seems to be, you know, the more he speaks to people, he's a celebrity. He likes the celebrity aspect of the politics that keeps him in front of the camera. He gets to stand in front of people and do his little stand-up act, you know, make fun of people if he wants. I mean, for instance, the other night when he was on TV and he was doing this thing about the Muslims and a couple of protesters were at the venue and, you know, the security people got a couple of the first person out, but there was more than one person that seemed to be making noise. And then Trump got on the security people. He's like, oh, there's another one. These security people need to do their job a little bit better. I mean, you know, everybody is expedient to him. Even the people that were the poor people that were working at the venue he had just immediately was mad at these people, you know, and throws them under the bus today. I mean, and seeing this guy, those kind of reactionary things and saying whatever you want, and today reacting to not being chosen as Time Person of the Year and really insulting the Chancellor of Germany. It's just, you know, I don't know how these people can sit here and listen to an individual who just talks about himself so much, like, you know, like braggingly. And it just shows the culture of the obsession with wealth, the culture of celebrity, you know, guys on TV. And really, he's kind of a rich person that's dangling everything that usually poor or working people want to hear from somebody that's rich. As I always say, yeah. The three words you want to hear, or the words you want to hear from your rich friend? I'm rich. Let me show you how to be rich too. You know, and that's kind of, I think, the unspoken promise that a lot of these people are hearing when they have Donald Trump speaking to them. On top of, you know, so many layers that you're dealing with here. On top of the racism, the blatant, obviously the racist that he appeals to. Then you got another layer of ignorance. They were saying the fact now that 65% of the people of Republicans think that what he's saying is okay, and there's like a percentage of college graduates in the GOP that are supporting him is like the percentage of these people that have graduated college that are supportive of Donald Trump is like 18%. So he's dealing with really kind of the really minimally. I don't want to say minimally educated because I don't want to say that you need a college degree to have you do need a college degree to have good education, but I don't want to present it as that being the only way one can be educated. However, 18% college graduates, that means whatever kind of ignorant stuff he's saying, there doesn't seem to be any kind of self, you know, these people don't seem to be thinking about what he's saying, and they're operating kind of emotionally and from their prejudice. You wanted to say, Mark?
Yeah, you know, I really think that, you know, he's lost it. You know, I really think that there's something wrong, you know, because he goes on and on and on and on. And once he starts talking, it's like he has to continue. He doesn't even come up for air. He goes on and on and on. It's like somebody who's obsessed, really. So I think he's a little strange, really. I just can't figure it out. He's talking about, you know, things that, you know, people just wouldn't even talk about. And then he loses his voice, and I don't know.
Well, I agree with you, Jen. The thing is that he just seems to weigh in on those people who basically are not that literate. They don't read. the papers every day. They don't follow politics closely. You know, there are people out here hurting, and they see what happened in San Bernardino, and they see what happened in Paris, and they worry about, oh, my goodness, this is going to happen here. It's finally happening here. Well, let me tell you something. They've already been here, you know. It's unfortunate that the government, the scrutiny of Homeland Security and all these other federal agencies that look into this sort of activity, dropped the ball on a couple of occasions. And they admittedly say that they can't cover everything. You know, that goes back to the Bloomberg campaign, see something, say something. You know, it makes sense. But at the end of the day, you know, Donald Trump is playing on those emotions and thinking, well, this is the only way with this racist banter back and forth. One minute he's condemning the Mexicans. Now he's got everybody who practices Islam. Everything is a protectionist method, a message with regard to America. And America is deeply invested in other parts of the world. So as president, he can't just turn around and undo what has taken years to develop in places like China, Eastern Europe, even Europe as a whole, South America. All these places, Americans are involved, and he has this protectionist demeanor, like, you know, we don't need to be dealing with the world. We have to bring it back here. Well, the horse is out the barn now. I mean, I bet you dollars to donuts that if he were to serve one administration, he can't undo what's already etched in stone, you know? And just this cavalier bravado attitude, like as if he's John Wayne, people of my age demographic would remember him. You know, I just think it's stupid, you know? It really is. I agree with you, Kay. I mean, it's so nonsensical and sophomoric for someone of his behavior. And I was just surprised because, you know, with all due respect, I like Russell Simmons. He's my man. You know, we shared time back in the day. But I'm sorry that it's taken this long for only today for him to say something about his boy. And, it comes down to that. I mean, somebody's got to rein his behind in somehow. And if it's not his campaign or people who are close to him, you know, I don't know what it's going to do. And I tell you, I mean, with the kind of lip service he gives, I'm surprised somebody hasn't I don't want to sound like as if I'm far, you know, promoting this activity, but it astounds me with the rhetoric he comes off with publicly that, you know, some unguarded moment has not happened. And he's been the victim of his own, device.
Well, I, first off, I think usually the individuals that take those type of actions that you're talking about are the people that are supporting him. You know, they usually have kind of some of the perspectives that he's appealing to. But it's just interesting. There's a lot of levels to his appeal to people. You know, the whole kind of saying what you think and, you know, coming out and saying some things that are funny, but, you know, doesn't know how to draw the line in terms of making fun of people like he did with that New York Times reporter that's disabled.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this guy thinks that everybody is expendable to him, but you really see the length and during his Obama years and the whole, and Donald Trump is kind of bringing it all to a head, really see the hatred and the prejudice that still exists in our country today. By the dominant culture, towards people of color and people of different diverse backgrounds and ethnicities being in this country, and really seeing how they really have a problem with people of color having rights and achieving the certain things that have been achieved in this country, and to the point where, I've often wondered some people actually believe there should be an unfair society. Some of these people actually believe that there should be a society where they are first-class citizens and everybody else is after them, you know, and that's part of the backlash of Obama being elected where, you know, a lot of white people feel that, you know, they're not the dominant culture in the United States and I'm not the dominant preferred citizen, and you know, just don't get the breaks or whatever for whatever reason. I don't see that being an actual fact. But you know, it's just when I wonder if some of these people. Well, it's clear that some don't have a sense of fairness and equality, and that everybody should be able to live their life to their fullest potential. But I wonder what the other individuals tell themselves at night to make themselves feel better about themselves when they really kind of are bigoted, but they camouflage their prejudices with other things, like they have a non-American culture, or our culture will be destroyed or whatever, you know. So all of these things, we've got a lot of things going on here. So our culture will be destroyed, and a whole bunch of stuff that's going on. We got another caller coming in. Here you go, caller. Welcome to the show.
Welcome, Glenda. Glenda Taylor.
Hello.
Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine. How are you?
I'm fine. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay,
I'm Rain Gillen.
Hi, good evening, Glenda.
Yes, hi. How are you? How are you doing?
Just fine.
So we're having a little bit of difficulty there. And here I'm giving you all these, you know, accolades. We're talking about, you know, some people's favorite person. His name is spelled T-R-U-M-P, I think. So I really can't figure him out. Glenda Taylor. Dr. Glenda Taylor. Are you a doctor yet?
No, not yet. I'm on my way. Not there yet.
Congratulations. I want to tell you, listen, you know, that Glenda, you probably haven't heard me talk to her before. This is an extremely bright woman. I think Glenda, you're one of the brightest women that I know. Your mind is, I don't know, I think you're on another planet. And your intellect is such that you really bring truth beyond illusion. As a matter of fact, that's the name of one of your books, if I'm not mistaken, African American Women. And when you, of course, I'm quite sure I remember Glenda Taylor. I had her on the show on WLIV, and pretty philosophical conversations, you know. I have a question, Glenda. What do you think of Mr. Trump?
Please. I you leave me speechless. That's all I can say. I just find him very, very interesting. You know, watching him over the years, and you know, when he started making his comments, and he's gotten progressively more Hitler-like. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's like it's really amazing to watch.
Yeah.
Because in my lifetime, like it's happened, you know, before my lifetime, and I know when I was younger, there were people like him who spoke, you know, in that manner. But to actually see someone openly, you know, speak the way he does and say the things he says, and he says it, you know, without shame, it's really amazing to actually, you know, witness.
Yeah. And you see things very deeply, you know, because of your problem with your eyesight. But the point is, so I want to really hear you. You feel the person, so you're coming at this from a different standpoint, a different point of view. Not necessarily a different point of view, but a different feeling. What is it that you're feeling about him?
Okay, Thompson. Is that a trick question? I remember Donald Trump since the 1980s, and
yeah.
It's just amazing to see someone basically speak his truth. How's that? That's his truth, and that's what he believes, and that's what he feels. And it didn't appear that way in the 80s. It didn't appear that way in the 90s. And I suspected, the type of person he was over the last 7 years by the way he was talking about, you know, President Obama and where he was born. But this candidacy has been an opportunity for him to show himself and what he really thinks, and what a great percentage of people within his party believe, which is not, when you think about the history of America and why specifically the Pilgrims came here in 1620, you would know that even they would be appalled at some of the things he said.
Yes, yes. And you
said,
I think that all these, go ahead,
Wayne,
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to, I have to agree with her. I mean, it, you know, this is a brand new law for this spectacle to be taking place on the political landscape. I mean, it really shows how far we're willing to turn the clock back for this level of mediocrity, you know? And it's just unfortunate that, you know, the voting populace, if they're not really informed and understand, you know, the dynamics, and I guess some people just don't care. There's some people who just like to see the pot stirred, and they don't care, you know, regardless, because I see this in regrettably, I underscore this, I see this very often in our community. Why do we go out and vote? Why should we vote? Things never change. And I don't subscribe to that, you know? I heard something earlier today that I think a lot of this country's 1% wealth have been tied to education at Harvard University. And, you know, as you know, Barack Obama is a Harvard grad. And
right.
I think, you know, maybe that should be a requirement for the White House. You know, I mean, I think anybody who follows Barack at this point is going to pale in comparison. With all due respect to Hillary Clinton, I mean, she's earned her right to even own that seat. But I'm saying moving forward, if this is what the Republican Party is putting out, this country is in trouble.
Yeah.
We already went through Sarah Palin. You know, do we need to have this happen again?
I'm not really sure, but I think Ted Cruz is a Harvard graduate too. And basically, when you listen to all those guys, they're all basically, you know, Donald Trump's siblings. Because they're all basically saying the same thing. He's just very unpolitically correct.
I'm not sure of the educational background of many of the other candidates. And there was one Republican who was moderate in that field, especially of the ones who get to speak in most of the debates. And I can't think of his name. He was a governor. He was in corporate America. And
talking about the guy from Ohio.
Yeah.
That one from Ohio. Something with an M, Mason. Something. I forgot his name, but he's from Ohio.
I think it's Kasich. Yeah. You know, I like him. I, for some reason, think, you know, when I sit there and I watch their field of candidates, I feel sorry that he's not going to get it, but he's the kind of person that seems to have that old-fashioned Republican mindset in terms of thinking things through thoroughly and being somewhat moderate in his position. But as for the others, you know, including Dr. Carson, who I think is an embarrassment to the black population in this country, with all due
embarrassment to the medical profession.
Yeah, that too, you know.
I know he's a genius in that area, but still, my goodness. He makes you wonder about his intelligence.
We are not being very nice. However, we are approaching this from a different standpoint. You know, and I'm glad to hear you two talk about it because I can't help but laugh. He goes on and on. You're not rational when you like to hear yourself talk without any commas, without any periods. Very often you don't even take a breath. But so there's something else going on here that if he became president, and I kind of think that's impossible, but people are going to be going around saying, what did he say? And so, in such a confused state, then we will have the most confused, you know, population in the world, because people are on the verge. But Glenda, let's talk about you. You know, let's talk about the art of visualization, you know, because I really, you know, been wanting to talk about this in depth for a long time, and I'm tired of talking about Trump. Trump is going to trump himself. Okay? So you were the one who introduced me to this book called The Mental Science of Thomas Traubert, Your Invisible Power. And it is about the art of visualization. And in this book, you tell me to do what? Do you remember?
Well, I don't specifically remember the details, but basically it talks about visualization, which
yeah.
is a technique that, you know, athletes use that, and Olympians and dancers and people who have to practice. Many of them practice in their mind, visualizing themselves, achieving the goal, which puts them in alignment with a certain vibration, and energetically, once they get with that, it becomes a reality.
Yeah.
So they practice
yeah.
first in their mind before they actually are able to achieve it in the physical world.
In other words, you have to see it. You have to eat it. You have to embrace it. You have to drink it. You have to become what is it, whatever it is you want, or you have to really just, you have to live it, eat it, drink it, touch it. You become whatever it is that you want in your life. I've tried
right.
it, and I've mentioned my, you know, my praying for I wanted $1 million. Do you remember that when you first gave me this book and what I did with it? I started praying for $1 million. All right, and in the book it says you have to see it, feel it, touch it. And in the book, someone else asked the lady who wrote the book for a certain amount of money, and she was telling them to count it out. Well, I did that for 3 or 4 months, but this is a true story, and I've told them before, and I laugh each time because even I don't believe it, but it happened. Anyway, I wanted $1 million, so I started counting out, you know, money almost to $1 million each night for about 3 or 4, you know, weeks, I would imagine, a couple months. And, you know, counting out $1 bills takes a long time to count up to $1 million. Am I right, Wayne?
Yeah.
So I started using phone.
I'm right behind you on that one.
So I started counting out my tens and then 20s, and then I finally went to $100 bill, and I think it was about 3 or 4 months. You know how you wake up in the morning, and you know what I used to do was I would call my bank to see if I had any money in my checking account. Miraculously, I just thought I'd do it. It became a habit. And, of course, it's a bill balance or whatever it was. But this morning, the morning that I finished counting for, you know, several weeks, maybe even a couple of months, I really don't remember exactly. I asked the lady in the bank, I said, would you please give me my balance, you know. And she said, $999,000 and da-da-da-da-da, you know, some other stuff, you know. And I said, what? And I said, I had gone crazy. So I said, Dorothy, would you please give me that, you know, give me that figure again. And she said, okay. She said, $999,000, and then you know, the rest of it. I said, one more time. She said, $999,000, and, you know, oh, the rest of it, you know that. Anyway, it happened. It was in my account. I couldn't believe it. I called my partner. I called Gus. I said, look, this is what happened, and so forth and so on. It's in my account. He says, I think you better call the bank because they're going to arrest you because they'll think you're dealing in drugs. I said, wow, you know. But anyway, so what happened was that I called, who else did I call? I don't know whoever else I called. But anyway, in the meantime, a call came in from Dorothy at the bank, and she said, you don't have $900 in your bank account. I said, no, what happened? And she said there was a company in Africa that had made a deposit going into a book company in New York. And there was one digit that caused it to go into my account.
Wow.
So I did have it. It is the truth. I have the bank record, and I put this on my page, you know, on the internet. It did happen. I even have the bank statement to prove it because I figured nobody's going to believe this. So that's the power of visualization that I was introduced to by one Glenda Taylor. Hello. Are you there?
Well, I have to start practicing that myself. I just recently met someone, and you know, I've been seeing it. I've been visualizing her in my mind, and I don't know if I could go as far as touching and feeling it, but I'm anxious.
Sure, old man.
I'm sorry. But it's true. I was in a forget about it. I have been thinking about someone. I guess I have to put this to practice,
yeah,
seriously.
You know, you have to put, listen, each time I've wanted something, this is serious. You know, each time I've wanted something, I have followed the book that you gave me. I blame it all on you, Glenda Taylor. Each time I have wanted something. Oh, but the important thing I wanted to mention in the book is, in the book it does say, in the name of Jesus Christ. Okay? You say that. You have to say that. So it is in the name of a higher power, of the higher power. So, but it happened. Too bad I wasn't able to keep it. But it really, really works. If you want something bad enough, you put certain things in place, you see it, you hear it, you live it, you touch it, you talk about it. You know,
Oprah Winfrey is the magic of that. Oprah Winfrey is the master of that. She has what she calls like a vision board, and when the things that she wants, she puts it on her board. And some people put it on a board, they put it in a journal, and they get pictures of what they want. And every day they look at it and they see it. And then they look at it, they see it, then they put it away, they look at it, they see it. They said that Michael Jackson did that same thing too. How he sold so many copies of Thriller. He used to write on his mirror, and he went into the studio, he would, you know, say like, this is sold, you know, whatever millions of copies, and you know, 50 million. I don't know what numbers he was using. And they said that Thriller, and the numbers that he was using was unheard of at the time. And that's what he did now, you know.
Wow.
Did it work? That's right. They said he did open it up. Athletes do that. And when you read their autobiographies, they tell you that, you know, what they saw. And some of them, when they were little kids, people like, you know, Beyonce and people like that, when they're little kids, they're singing in front of a little microphone, seeing themselves in front of a public, a very large amount of people, and doing it. They tell you. But you have to realize what they're really saying. In their mind, they're creating it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what age, I mean, how old, I mean, this is just a fact of life. If you apply this principle, it works all the time.
That's right.
It does. It works for me. And it's still working for me, really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does work.
Wayne Dyer has a book. Remember, the late Wayne Dyer has a book called You'll See It When You Believe... No, You'll See It When You Believe It. That you have to believe it first, and then you'll see it.
That's right.
And remember, the Bible says, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, nothing shall be impossible to you. So it's a matter of faith and belief, that you're believing it, and then you take that with an image in your mind, and you create it.
Yeah.
How did you happen to come across this, Glenda? You know,
the book or the ideology?
Ideology.
What happened is, I used to listen when I was much younger. I used to listen to Robert Shuler, and basically, Robert Shuler was a positive thinking minister, but he also used to apply and speak of principles in the Bible and how it related to positive thinking. You know, you say to that mountain, move. You know, things like that he would talk about.
Yeah.
And then I just happened to go in the bookstore looking for his books, and then I found Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. And then I read W. Clement Stone, James Allen, As a Man Thinketh. And then when I started reading those books, I'm like, wow. It was just a shock to go into the book also called Creative Visualization. And you're reading this, The Greatest Power in the Universe by U.S. Anderson. Eric Butterworth, you know, did a lot of books like that. And I was very young. I started reading it, and I was fascinated. And the thing is, you know, you can't necessarily do it every day because you kind of forget it. You get loose focus and get off track. But when you do it, it works. It really works.
It really does.
Well, yeah, well, I really intend to. You know, sometimes I get distracted. But I have to agree with you, and it's funny. I'm reminded, as you mentioned, Robert Shuler, the late Betty, Dr. Betty Shabazz, Malcolm X's widow. She was a big advocate of Robert Schuller.
Oh, really? Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Robert Schuller spoke at her funeral.
Really?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Riverside Church. She was a big, I didn't know how close she was. And from time to time, back in the day, we lived near each other. I'm in the Bronx, and she was in Mount Vernon. And, you know, we would have lunch or dinner at this Chinese restaurant, and she would sing the praises of Schuller. And I don't think Schuller's with us anymore, right? I think he passed.
Yes, a couple of years ago. His wife passed away, like maybe 3-4, and he recently passed away. And he was really amazing. Well, because he was. And you know, it was really interesting because I saw him one time. Well, I used to watch him all the time on television. And then one time I saw him being interviewed. And it was like, wow. It was like very mild. You know, you could see that he was spiritual, very spiritual, calm, gentleman.
Right.
And the personality was just so different.
And one time I thought it was fake. And, you know, who reminds me of him a little bit is this Joel Osteen, evangelist, a televangelist. I don't know if he's a younger person. He comes on Sunday.
Yeah, he's a younger version.
I
would say he's a modern day Schuller. I think the difference is that Osteen, who I enjoy watching, but I think his knowledge of religion and the Bible is much more limited than Schuller. And to me, he's basically a Christian motivational speaker. And he's a Christian. You know, even though he's a minister of pastor's church, and he has a huge following, he's very motivated.
Right.
Whereas Schuller would, like, take a scripture, specifically the words of Jesus, and he would basically show you that Jesus was telling you that you could just go for whatever it is that you want to do and, you know, be a – like, don't stop at the top. That was one of Robert Schuller's things. Move ahead was possibly really thinking. Self-love, the dynamic force of success.
Yeah. What's happening is that, you know, a lot of these speakers are really teaching people how to mentally reach out and receive a never-failing supply of whatever you want. Now, I'm looking at the book, Your Invisible Power by Genevieve Bay Round. By the way, when I got another copy, because this copy is held together by Scotch tape. You should see it. I can barely read it. But the place where I got a second one from in Marina Del Rey in California, that store doesn't exist anymore, and I went into a panic. But I did find out a little while ago, not too long ago, that the Art of Visualization is on the Internet, so people can probably get the copy of it. Sounds like I'm selling it. But anyway, it's a lot of information.
But it's worth it. It's great information. There's another one called The Science of Getting Rich. That's another great one. And a lot of those older books are probably in the public domain.
But who is that by? The Science of Getting Rich. Who is that by?
I can't think of the name of the author right now, but you could Google it and you'll find it. And you can get it online for free because I think a lot of those things in the public domain and they're not under copyright anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. But Joel Osteen is good to listen to on Sundays because he keeps you uplifted and thinking positively. He really does.
Right. No, I think your analysis is on point because I think I've heard him even say as much, you know, without downplaying his knowledge of the Bible and the scriptures.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a positive message that he's trying to promote. And, and if you're facing a lot of turmoil and we all have our, you know, personal challenges and things like that, it is very inspiring to listen to him. And it's funny. I don't want to juxtapose him with some of the black televangelists, but for some reason they don't seem to resonate with me as I've gotten out of Osteen. You know, I see the gentleman Creflo Dollar, and to me he seems to be a cross, and this is my myopic opinion, and I hope not to be, you know, penalized for this, but I think he's a cross between Reverend Ike and and maybe the Billy Graham type evangelist, you know, that sort of thing.
Let me tell you something about Glenda. Let me tell you something that Glenda has written. She said, today, you, Glenda, have said, today is about you. So look around and smile at your life and your choices. Don't worry about the past, for you should have taken over the opportunities you ignored. Instead, breathe in the life that surrounds you. Let it fill your soul with light and hope. Your beauty and wisdom have inspired, encouraged, soothed, and strengthened the people around you. Reflect on the past and all the memories, good and bad, that you have made you who you are today. Your journey is far from over, as you will continue to grow, change, and flourish. You also say, you may be another year older, but you are also another year stronger and wiser. You are loved by many. Life can be so busy, we sometimes take for granted the important little things that make us smile. Look at the sunset. Share a cup of coffee with your best friend. Or hear the wind rustle through the trees. Take some time to listen to life and feel the sun on your face. Stop to watch the butterflies in your garden. Today, I give you the gifts of beauty, inspiration, love, and reflection. Use them wisely and carry them with you as you enter another year ahead. Enjoy your day and have a very happy birthday. She wrote that in 2013, by the way.
Wow.
You wrote something that you sent to me. Now, also, he says, meaning the Orp Genevieve Dayran says, in your visible power, that it is hereby recommended that you should make the effort to obtain the things which you feel will bring you joy, provided that your desires are in accord with the joy of living. How do you interpret that, the joy of living, Glenn?
Yeah. What I want to say is Michael Beckwith, who I think is the name of the church, is Agape in California. He is very, very good. And he's a black guy, and you don't hear of him much, but he has a huge church. And he teaches that type of, it's a cross between African-American, and that highly metaphysical work that you're talking about.
Well, this is in Los Angeles.
Yes, that man and the music, he and his wife, they write music, and the music is beautiful, and it has like an African texture to it, but yet at the same time, he's awesome. And I don't know if he comes on a weekly basis, you know, but I know he has a tremendous amount of tapes and literature and book, and he is really, he's like a level above some of the, you know, the other guys, you know.
I've forgotten about him.
And you would really enjoy him. His music, it kind of elevates your thinking. Like, say, when I was in the hospital in 2001, my sister gave me a copy of the music of one of the tapes, and it was very good. But you were saying something about the joy of living, and we have to enjoy life and breathe in, like you said.
It says here, too, in the book, while the laws of the universe cannot be altered, they can be made to work under specific conditions, thereby producing results for individual advancement which cannot be obtained under the spontaneous workings of the law provided by nature. So, I have given of the possibilities in store for you through visualizing. And through visualizing that carry you beyond your past experience and nowhere break the continuity of the law of cause and effect. Mm-hmm. Comments? All power there is in operation. Simply waiting to be given direction in the one and only way through which it can take specific action. And this means reaction in concrete or physical form. Then the mission to which this book is dedicated has been fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. Tom? I gotta get a copy.
I think I gave you my copy. I don't think I have a copy anymore.
Try to remember.
I haven't heard Eric say anything.
He's silent right now. He's listening, but he's knows of this.
I know he does, because in his profession, a lot of actors, because I'm sure that in his mind, he practices a lot of things before he actually, you know, does it on stage or screen.
Yeah, I was just listening to you guys in the other room on the show, and you were discussing Michael Beckwith and Agape. I've been to that church out there, and yeah, he is a a spiritualist or a holy guy that seems to reach a lot of people. His church is very diverse, cross-section of black and white and Hispanic and all kind of races. And it is Bible-based, but it seems kind of a New Age kind of that feeling of Joel Osteen as well. But, yeah, the visualization is very important, you know, from a performance perspective. You know, performers have to visualize at least doing a good job. So, and it's a little bit different in acting. We call it substitution when you have to try and replicate an emotion or a circumstance. So, but it all works out, and that is something that can work in one's life as well. Of course, you mentioned earlier that athletes do it.
Yeah, and you know, we have to try to remember, I'm going to be quoting again, you have to try to remember that the picture you think, feel, and see is reflected into the universal mind, and by the natural law of reciprocal action must return to you in either spiritual or physical form. Knowledge of this law of reciprocal action between the individual and the universal mind opens to you free access to all you may wish to possess or to be. Okay? And then I'm going down a little bit. It says, whatever you think and feel yourself to be, the creative spirit of life is bound to faithfully reproduce in a corresponding reaction. In other words, for every equal action, you get a reaction. Let me just quote from the book. I'm not going to. Anyway, this is the great reason for picturing yourself and your affairs the way you wish them to be as existing facts through invisible to the physical eye and living in your picture. An honest endeavor to do this. Always recognizing that your own mind is a projection of the originating spirit and will prove to you the best there is yours in all your ways.
Yeah. I remember that's how I got the, because I only had soil. I didn't have grass when I moved out here, and I needed grass, and I wanted it, but they had something they call sod, which is basically like these little squares, like a quilt, and they actually lay down the grass, and I kept on like visualizing. My mother was visualizing it, and then all of us, and it was really amazing, because we said, we need it. And it was, you know, it was going to cost a lot of money, and one day she was at the school long before she retired, and she met this guy in the yard at the college, and he was planting the trees near the college in the new building. She got into a conversation with him, and she realized that the man was like about she worked in Brooklyn, and we're out in East End of Long Island, and this man lived 5 minutes from us, and he was a landscaper, and he was doing, you know, the new things at the school, and he ended up coming and putting and laying and doing all the landscaping in the yard, and he did it on a payment plan that was affordable, and that was definitely the power of visualization, okay? Because the man only lived 5 minutes from us, but yet when she met him, that was an hour and a half away from where, you know, we lived.
That's amazing.
And he ended up being the landscaper and doing the job. And in my opinion, he did an excellent job.
Wow. Amazing.
But, you know, one of the secrets, I got to tell you the secret. And reading all the books, one of the things that's important, and because I call my house, this is the house that Faith built. One of the things that I remember in reading in some book, and I don't remember which one, is that if you really want something, really depends on, like, say if you want an apartment or a home or, you know, like a car, whatever it is, what you do is take something that you're used to being around or seeing. Like, say if you want a house and you have, like, a favorite chair that you have now wherever you are. And what you do is what you said, you see, you feel, you touch, and you put that chair in the place that you want in your mind. And then you sit in that chair and stay in that chair, and you will get the house that you're looking for. Or, like, if you have a blouse or a shirt or something that you're used to that you're very familiar with, and you put it in a car, in the back seat of the car, or whatever you do, and then people are visualizing the car, and seeing the image of that shirt or that item inside of the thing that you don't have, that somehow links the physical vibration with what it says in the Hebrews, the evidence of the unseen, and that connection, it connects and it helps basically create a magnet for it to manifest in the physical world.
That is amazing. I don't know what more to say. I definitely have got to put that to practice.
Yeah. So if you train yourself in the practice of deliberately picturing your desire and carefully examining your picture, I'm quoting again, you will soon find that your thoughts and desires proceed in a more orderly procession than ever before. Having reached a state of ordered mentality, you are no longer in a constant state of mental hurry. Hurry is fear and consequently destructive. All right? Visualizing is a great success of success. I'm telling you. I've done it.
Yeah, it works. It definitely works.
Wow.
And I realize even when you write proposals, Kay, because I used to think about it as like, how did I manifest? I mean, what was happening that was creating so many programs? Because, 100 people submit a proposal. And why was I so successful at getting them, quote, unquote, funded? And, of course, it takes writing skills and all of that. But I realized that a lot of what I was doing, and I didn't think of it at the time that I was doing this, but in order to, some people just write it or they're whatever, and some people just kind of like copy and paste and do all kinds of things. But what I used to do, which I learned like really, much later, is that I was mentally putting all the pieces together, figuring it out. I was doing all these things in my mind. So by the time I actually produced the document and submitted it.
Now we have 19 seconds. Talking to people. Glenda Taylor, Truth Beyond Illusion is one of her books. Fascinating. Another book is The Blind Light. Another book is Jalamuso's Drum. Please get that book to me again, Glenda. I must have left my copy somewhere. The book that I'm reading is The Mental Science of Thomas Troward, Your Invisible Power by Genevieve Behren. You may be able to. I'm selling the book. But it's worth it. Waves of Consciousness. Thank you, Glenda. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank
nice talking to you, Wayne.
You too. Thank you. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Thanks to our co-host once again, Wayne Gilman. You can catch us every week, every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. live, and we're also archived. I'm the son. My name is Eric Payne. Thanks for listening. You are.
I'm Kay Thompson. Join us again Wednesday, 8 to 9.
All right, go ahead. Finish everything.
BlogTalkRadio.com, Kay Thompson Live.
All righty, everybody. Have a good evening. And BlogTalkRadio.com/ Kay Thompson Live is the direct website. You can listen to the archive anytime. Take care. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening in.